Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every daily supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Shohei Miyajima, who is the manager of Dashi Okume in Brooklyn, New York. The New York location of Dashi Okume opened in September 2022, but the history of the company Okume goes back to 1871. And dashi is a Japanese-style stock, but unlike Western-style stock, it is used very extensively in Japanese cuisine. And dashi provides a rich umami taste, which is the fifth taste after salty, sour, bitter, and sweetness, and which is foundational in many Japanese dishes. And dashi is very easy to make in your kitchen because its ingredients have been carefully made over a long time with special techniques by masters. And Dashi Okume sells a whole variety of premium ingredients of dashi, and you can customize your dashi as well. So today we'll discuss why Shohei decided to become a dashi expert, the main ingredients of dashi and their characteristics, flavors, how to effectively maximize umami by combining different dashi ingredients, easy recipes that you can try with dashi, and much, much more. But before you start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Shohei Miyajima. Hello, Shohei. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So, first of all, to get to know you, where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
I'm from Japan, Tokyo. And basically, I was raised by foodie parents, so I had very delicious food from like childhood. So I grew up eating Japanese food prepared by mom and like ethnic food prepared by dad.
It's amazing. And your dad cooked too, so.
Yeah. He's not a chef, but he's really good at cooking. He's a book editor, but he has been eating lots of good food with Nobles. So he kind of tried to imitate the ones he tried, and we got to try all his food. Also, I was actually studying in Canada for a year. So I was staying with a Russian host family. So I spent a year eating like lots of good, great Russian food, like pierogi, borscht. And also I kind of grew up in a house that is particular was about food. So I even had a porridge made from Laos kombu broth when I was a child, and also like I always went to Tsukiji fish market with my dad for New Year's Eve and like New Year. So yeah, I was really surrounded by like delicious food, I think.
Wow, it sounds like top notch, especially, you know, the Laos kombu, like even Japanese people don't know specific species of a kombu. Right, very impressive. Right. So, and then I heard that you used to work in a very different industry from food, despite your childhood. Before you joined Dashi Okume, so now you educate people, and then you know, your Japanese food culture is kind of your focus. So how did you get into this business?
Yeah, like you said, I used to work for different industries, such as like fashion retail or consulting for business. And yeah, I don't really pick the job by industry, but by mission. So I was very passionate about, I'm very passionate about the mission of the company now, that is to bring Tokyo culture to the world. Then yeah, it's the main reason why I joined this company. And also, yeah, there's a couple of reasons why I joined this company as well. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's hard to find a more deeply rooted dashi company than Dashi Okume. So yeah. So we'll discuss the company. So Dashi Okume is a fresh new concept created by Fumitoshi Kano, who is the fifth generation of the family business Okume, which started 150 years ago. So first of all, what is Okume and what is its history?
So Dashi Okume is, Dashi Okume is one of the business of Okume Shoten. And Okume is a seafood wholesaler from since 1871. So for 151 years, we have been selling dried fish, saikyozuke fish, and dried dashi ingredients to like Michelin three-star restaurants, high-class supermarket, and other professionals. So yeah, we are the oldest seafood wholesaler existing in Tsukiji and Toyo fish market.
Right. Yeah, I saw the history. Even Tsukiji, everybody says Tsukiji is the biggest fish market, which now moved to Toyosu, like you just mentioned. But it's really even the beginning of Tsukiji market. Your company, Dashi Okume, your parent company, is there. So it's really impressive how also the dashi is strong in history, in Japanese cuisine, how foundational it is. So let's go into the concept of Dashi Okume, which is new. So what is the concept of Dashi Okume and what is the difference between the parent company Okume?
Yeah, Dashi Okume is like part of the business of Okume. So we are the same company, but Dashi Okume, you can make your own dashi and you can pick your own combination from 30 dashi ingredients, and then we can grind everything at the store, in-store factory, and pack into small sachets. And customer can take it back only in like 20 minutes or so.
Right.
Yeah, we also like offer Japanese teishoku set meal. And we actually brought the best of Tokyo, straight from Tokyo, just like fish. We have been selling this fish for like a long time to the Michelin three-star restaurant. So we brought the top-notch fish from Tokyo fish market, and also rice and miso. Yeah, we also use the top-notch ingredients to provide our teishoku meal.
Right. Okay. So so the listeners who have no idea usually how dashi is, dashi ingredients are sold. It's like you go to the supermarket or like, you know, the specialty market like Tsukiji, you have independent ingredients that we're going to discuss later, like kombu or the bonito. But at Dashi Okume, you can customize the combination of each ingredient, which is key to maximize umami, which also we're going to discuss later. So this idea of customizable dash package for yourself is pretty novel. And even Japanese didn't think of that. So that's very smart.
And it's very rare in Japan. It's already patented.
Right.
I don't think you will find a similar one. Yeah.
And also I think this came out of the confidence that you know, Okume, the parent company, carries the best ingredients, because otherwise you can't make good custom dashi without the best ingredients. So it really is just as a result of good business for 151 years. So yeah, this is fascinating. And you mentioned that teishoku is a set menu. It's like, you know, it's just a set menu. It's usually if you go to Japan and then, or lunch break, you have a perfect seasonal ingredients teishoku menu. And it's just like a very common term. But so the Dashokumen's the business is run by Kano Corporation. And I heard it's not just dashi ingredients, but, you know, like the restaurant business and also production. So it sounds like very forward-minded, really try to educate the world with good umami-based food concepts. So I really found this interesting.
Thank you.
Hi.
I really wanted to also deliver umami from the dashi or like Japanese food.
Mm.
Yeah, it's also like companies like mission, but we also wanted, I also personally wanted to deliver umami to the world because of my experience in Hong Kong. And I used to live in Hong Kong like for a couple of years, and people are really addicted to the Japanese food. And I think what makes like this addictiveness is umami. And I personally wanted to do that. So I also joined this company because of that reason.
Mm, yeah. Right. Well, that's interesting because Japanese, all those dashi ingredients, a lot of them, I mean, all of them are probably dried and cured and the umami is concentrated. And back in like a couple centuries ago, one of the major export items was a dashi ingredients and was exported to China. So I'm sure Hong Kong people have that kind of the umami-rich ingredients. So
That's right.
Right. So before we get into all those fun stuff, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss actual ingredients of dashi and their unique flavors and how you can use them. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new series on Heritage Radio Network called The Culinary Call Sheet, where we give a peek into the back kitchen of culinary media. I'm your host, April Jones.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Bresnitz. Part of why we started this show was to offer an unofficial mentorship for anyone who is interested in learning about all aspects of food and video, whether that's TV, social media, online, or just something you want to do for fun.
Absolutely. What was once niche or a little silly, as I'm sure you remember, Darren, when we started out.
Yes, ma'am.
Has now become such a massive playing field for so many creatives using food as the medium.
It's something that has driven us professionally and personally for so many years. What excites me the most about this show is that we're going to sit down with some of the industry leaders to hear how they made it and what drew them into this industry.
With 20 years in the culinary production game ourselves, we're hoping we can give, through these conversations, an insider's view into personal stories from the field, as well as an in-depth behind-the-scenes look into some of the most popular food programming in today's evolving culinary media landscape.
We'll be covering everything from how to style your food, to how to license IP, to developing your own ideas, and some tips from the masters of how to host your own show.
Yeah, it's a little bit of conversation, how to, and how do you do the things that you do in culinary media, which I'm so excited about. I love so many of the guests that are coming on this season. We have talent from Food Network, from Vice Media, Eater, Refinery 29.
We've met some of the best people in the world, both in front of and behind the camera. And we're bringing them all together to share their stories, their delicious adventure, and their unique journey into this crazy world.
So to be the first to hear our episodes when they launch this fall, go to wherever podcasts are streaming and hit subscribe, and make sure to give us a follow at the Culinary Call Sheet on Instagram.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs on Heritage Radio Network, HRN. I'm your host, Aki Katayama. My guest today is Shohei Miyajima, who is the manager and a dashi expert at Dashi Okume in Brooklyn, New York. All right, so let's talk about dashi. So what is dashi and how is it different from Western style stock?
Yeah, so dashi is a Japanese term for natural broth. So dashi does not refer only to like Japanese dashi. Even like French fawn or bouillon or like Chinese tom are also dashi. And Japanese dashi is one of them. And I think the characteristic of Japanese dashi, its strong umami component and the fact that it can be also like made in a shorter time than like bouillon fawn. It takes about only like 5 minutes or so. Yeah, it's a big difference. And yeah, Japanese dashi is mainly like made from dried bonito, dried sardines, kombu, and also shiitake mushroom. So it's really quick. You can just have to boil these kind of ingredients for 5 minutes, and it's already delicious.
Right. Yeah, because someone else did the job for you so outside the kitchen before you get them. So, right. So, And what are the most popular ingredients of dashi in traditional Japanese cuisine? You mentioned a couple, but you have 30 different dashi ingredients at your store.
It varies from region to region. But generally speaking, the ingredients for like dashi are dried bonito, dried small fish, like niboshi, are like anchovies or frying fish, and also kombu from Hokkaido, like hidaka, laosu, and yushiri or makombu. And also like shiitake mushroom is the main ingredients for dashi.
So now listeners probably can get the idea of what it is, like dried umami-rich ingredients. Because it's dried, the umami is concentrated and easy to process. You can rehydrate it and then release all those umami in it. And not just umami, but minerals and other good tastes in each ingredient. So, all right.
Yeah.
So, so since most of our listeners have never seen dashi ingredients, even if we mentioned it, let's just dig into some of them. So, first of all, what is katsuobushi or the cured bonito, and how is it made?
Yeah. So simply speaking, like katsuobushi is bonito, that is cut into like three pieces, boiled and deboned, and then dried by smoking. And some of them are even like then molded for a couple of months. It sounds actually very simple, but it actually takes about more than a month and to make one. And for some katsuobushi, it takes about like 6 months as well. So, and if you have never seen, you might be surprised to see the dried bonito blocks. They are pretty hard, like wood, and you have to use grinder or shaver to make one, to use one. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, actually, I went to one of those most traditional, well-respected cured bonito katsuobushi factories, then I was amazed. It's of course, it's, you know, they say put some very precious mold, but it's just totally, of course, it's sanitary, very, it's like, operation room level clean. And it's also the craftsmanship. Like it's almost like their baby, carefully checked regularly, very frequently. And then Kyoto Michelin star restaurants just fight for the best quality one because it's not mass produced. So it's such a premium item and it smells amazing. So
yeah, it's a lot of effort to make a good dry bonito flakes. Yeah, it's amazing.
Right. But it doesn't mean that you have to get all those premium items, because if you go to the supermarket, shaved bonito in a plastic small packages, that's always a go-to. Like if you want something, you know, but better soup taste or miso soup or just anything, you can just get one of those and I put it in the whole order and you're in the business. So it doesn't matter. I mean, at least of course, the pricier items can be more valuable, but it doesn't have to be because you can use it every day. That's the point of dashi. So next, so what is kombu and how is it made?
Kombu is kelp in English, and it's a seaweed, one type of seaweed. It's collected and dried in a sea, near the sea. And in Japan, mostly like 90% of kombu kelp comes from Hokkaido. And like kombu has lots of glutamic acid, one of the umami components. So it is a very common ingredient. Not only in Japanese cuisine, but also I see a lot of Western chefs using kombu in their dishes these days. So it's getting more popular and popular, like years by years, I feel like.
Mm. Right. And interestingly, you mentioned a couple different types of kombu, and I heard 90% of kombu still comes from Hokkaido, where very cold clean water can grow the best kombu. So maybe you can tell us different types of kombu, because you mentioned Laosu and Dima kombu or something, yeah. Right? So
yeah, we mainly use like four kinds of kombu. Very basic one is Hiraga kombu. It's very savory. It's very basic but versatile kombu, rich savory flavor and unique taste. And also Nishi kombu is often used in kaiseki restaurant, and it has rich aroma, pure umami, and like smooth, clear stock. Also, the color is very clear, so it's often used in a kaiseki restaurant in Japan, in Kyoto. And also, there is makombu, sweet kelp. It's very full-bodied and elegant, rich aroma. Kombu, and the last one is Laos kombu, which is, we call it a king of kombu. And it has rich aroma and a deep, complex taste. So we usually recommend this Laos kombu because lots of customers in the U.S. wants a full-body, strong umami taste. So yeah, they like this kombu a lot in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Right, amazing, right? Just only kelp, but there's so much, so.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And what is niboshi, or it's called iriko in the western part of Japan, and how is it made?
Niboshi are the terms, Japanese term for small dried fish, and that has been made by boiling and dried. And because Japan is surrounded by sea, so that the factory is very close to the ocean, and it's very important that they're close to each other. That makes it possible to boil the fish in very fresh conditions. And even like some of the fish that we handle, the mouth of their fish is open. This means that they are boiled very quickly after they're caught and while they are still alive. So when you want to check the good quality of good niboshi, you can always take a look at their mouth, whether they're open or not. That's the best way to know the quality of the niboshi.
Right. Oh, that's good to know. So it's just the small fish, usually they call it Japanese anchovy, right?
Anchovy is one type of a dried small fish, niboshi. So there are many kind of niboshi, like for example, we make niboshi from like dried flying fish, or horse mackerel, or even like lizard fish, barracuda, or even we handle like black salt sea bass. So there are many kinds of dried small fish.
Mm, right. Okay. And I'm sure each one has different umami and different things.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So these are the cured bonito, katsuobushi, and kombu and niboshi. These are the major components. I mean, there are some mushrooms and vegetable elements too, but
yes.
So, well, the best thing is to go to the Shokume and see them in one very beautiful,
yes, please, yeah.
Right, like showcases and right. So let's talk about something very important. So dashi is made by mixing those different ingredients. So why do you do that?
Yeah, we mix various kinds of dashi, mainly to maximize umami, because there are like three types of umami from dashi. One is scenic acid from dried bonito, and the other is glutamic acid from kelp, and also lastly, guanylic acid from dried shiitake is also important to make umami. And by mixing everything, we can maximize the taste of umami about 8 times more than using just a single ingredient. So it's very important that you mix those acids, those three acids together to maximize umami.
Right, 8 times. That is, it's not just addition, it's multiplied, which is always the key.
Yes, yes.
Right. Okay. By the way, you know, these umami sounds Japanese, and actually Japanese scientist Kikunae Ikeda, I think he discovered scientifically that taste as umami in 1908, I think. But it's everywhere. It's like cheese has glutamic acid, tomato also, and onion, and in snake acid, it's in the meat, like steak. So all those, and it just doesn't have to be shiitake. And the guanylic acid can be found in any other mushrooms, like chanterelle to anything. So so basically, I have like Western style, like a dried chanterelle. I can use that for making dashi. So it's a very universal idea. And just because it's called umami and sounds like Japanese, dashi is such a universal concept. So it doesn't have to be those specifically Japanese ingredients for dashi, but it can be applied. Right. Yeah. Okay. So, by the way, what's the, out of these glutamic acid, inosinic acid, guanylic acid, what's the ratio of the best combination to maximize the umami?
So we actually have a dashi laboratory in Japan to study about dashi. And so far what we found out is that it's very good to, our golden ratio is 50% of inosinic acid from dried fish and 30% of inosinic acid from dried small fish and 10% from seaweed and 10% from mushroom. So this is a golden ratio of okume. But yeah, this is just a golden ratio. So some chefs even like to play with different ratio. But if you follow this ratio, you can make a very tasty dashi with lots of umami. So we usually recommend this this ratio.
Right. Yeah, and it depends on if you add more onion or miso or soy sauce, that can increase more glutamic acid. You can just adjust based on what with dashi is used. So it's interesting.
Yes, that's right.
But good to know. So bonito, 50%, and niboshi, 30%, kombu 10%, and mushroom 10%. So I have to remember that. Okay. And then, so could you give us some examples of how to combine, food-wise? What's the example of these three elements being in your dish?
Three elements?
Yeah, so it's like... kombu and bonito used in a miso soup.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, you can use this kind of combination easily. For example, you can make miso soup. It's the easiest way to enjoy this dashi. You can also drink by itself, but if you want to make miso soup, you just have to brew dashi, add ingredients, and then dissolve miso into it and add some tofu and seaweed. So yeah, it's very simple to make taste dashi and use dashi for cooking.
Mm. Right. Even when you simmer vegetables like carrots or onion or anything, and I cook it down, and then some soy and sugar and all those basic Japanese cooked vegetables with dashi. It makes so much better than just combining, relying on the umami or the delicious taste of vegetables themselves. So yeah, it's pretty versatile, and you can just, it's not going to really change dramatically from like a curry powder, make a different dish. It's not like that. It's very subtle, but it's deep. So it's very versatile.
Yeah, that's right. Because dashi is not a seasoning, but like base for cooking. So it doesn't really change the taste dramatically, but it gives a deep umami to any kind of dish. So yeah, I think it's very versatile, and you can add dashi to your like everyday cooking. Even like Western cooking is nice.
To me, my image is like it's an elevation of the bottom line. So even if I'm a such a bad cook, if I put good dashi, it really tastes better, way better than without. So yeah, I feel like sometimes I'm like, just my go-to rescue ingredient. So, okay. And also in Japan, there are regional variations of popular dashi and dashi ingredients. So could you give us some examples?
Yes. Japanese dashi culture is like, we often describe as like bonito flakes in the east side of Japan, like Tokyo, and kombu in the west, like Kyoto or Osaka. So yeah, historically like bonito flakes was produced in like Kyushu area and Shikoku area. It was brought to Edo, previous Tokyo name, in during Edo period, and it was spread to eastern Japan, and also kombu was from Hokkaido, but they were all brought to to Osaka and Kyoto, straight from Hokkaido. So Tokyo was in Tokyo. There were only like leftover kombu, and that's why the culture of kombu didn't really develop in Tokyo, and more bonito flakes was used in dashi in Tokyo.
Interesting.
And yeah, and also like some parts of Shikoku or Jugoku area and Kyushu, they use like flying fish ago dashi. So they are like regional dashi that can be found in Japan.
Interesting. Yeah, so there is a term, kombu road, and that's the route centuries ago from Hokkaido to Kyoto. The rich emperors and nobles could afford getting kombu from Hokkaido because the Hokkaido kombu producers knew they were able to sell the high-quality kombu. So there is the route of the ship from Hokkaido to the Kyoto area through Fukui, and it's amazing. So maybe, I don't know which came first, but in Kyoto, they prefer very clean, mild taste and how it looks. That's why, they don't use the bonito. It's more like a kombu, and also kombu was available, and high-grade kombu was available. And So before we started the show, you said in Kyoto, they don't use niboshi, the dried fish either, right? Mostly.
In like Kyoto style, they like to use maguro bushi, dried tuna, and also rishi kombu is very popular among the people in Kyoto, as well as shiitake. Yeah, so we have a premix of Kyoto dashi, and yeah, we also use the same ingredients for this.
So Kyoto style dashi usually makes the color of other ingredients, main ingredients, cleaner and vivid. And then in Tokyo, it's more like, intense flavors and a very quick Tokyo mindset, like New Yorkers. So, So it's interesting. Like if you visit different regions, you can have different dashi for soba noodles, miso soup, because they have different variations of dashi ingredients. So, yeah, so listeners, if you go to Japan next time and just pay attention to regional variation, because of dashi variations, you can find very different dishes per different region. All right, so, and then you have, as I said earlier, you have about 30 dashi ingredients at the dashi okume. which is in the cool Greenpoint, Brooklyn. I don't know what's happening, but Greenpoint in Brooklyn, it's there are a lot of interesting new cool shops and restaurants. So it's always fun to visit there. And your shop is super cool and sleek and modern. But Japanese and very open, literally open and inviting. Big front entrance. And then one thing I really want to stress that all of your ingredients are displayed in the glass cases, like candy stores. So it's shining. And I saw when I passed by, a lot of people taking pictures as well because they're so beautiful. So since you opened the shop in Brooklyn, what are the most popular combinations of your custom dashi? Maybe you can give us like top three orders.
Actually, they are like, we have like 30 ingredients, so they are like medium combination that you can make at a custom-made dashi stand. But they are like mainly like two popular combinations. So one is like Kyoto style dashi that I have explained just now, with an like elegant flavor and a little bit of sweetness. And the other is like like song umami flavor made by adding a bit of soda bonito and arabushi, dried anchovies, black sauce sea patch, grilled frying fish, and some lizard fish as well as kombu and donkoshitake. So yeah, I think there are some people who like elegant style and some people who likes strong umami taste with like complex flavor of like lots of ingredients. So yeah, these are very popular now at the custom-made dashi stand.
Do you know how they use your dashi? Like in pasta or what kind of dishes? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I heard from like some customers that they make pasta with our dashi, like soup pasta with dashi. And they also made curry, oden. Like Japanese oden. They even made ramen with a grilled frying fish.
Right. Oh, ramen's just a very like no brainer. You can make a good soup sure. Right. I am fairly familiar with dashi ingredients because I grew up in Japan. But choosing different ingredients and making a harmonized flavor sounds very challenging to make it right. So what's your advice?
Well, it may seem very difficult, but we have like dashi sommelier to like suggest you some good combinations. And also, as I told you, it's not very difficult to combine dashi if you follow the ratio. Good ratio. It's all about science, so just have to consider adding like good amount of inosinic acid from dried fish and good amount of glutamic acid from kombu and guanyu acid. So I think you just have to follow that ratio and everybody can make great dashi.
Right. So
if you get lost, we can always help you also at the store.
Right. I know your secret because I saw this, the order sheet. Meaning you have this golden ratio and, stated clearly in one page, the sheet of paper. And you have different ingredients, A, B, C, D, which is dried fish, dried small fish, seaweed, mushrooms, and also vegetables. So, and then each ingredient has a different kind of chart, elegant, sweet, sharp, refreshing, versatile. So as far as you follow this, you can really get it right, or you just ask what should I get?
We are all like dashi sommelier, so we can help you out as well.
Right. Oh, it must be a really fun job.
It's really fun to drive umami through dashi.
Right. Okay. And by the way, who's your customer?
Since we have a store in Greenpoint, so lots of customers are from like neighborhood. And I was very surprised that some of them even have tried using like dashi ingredients by itself to make dashi. So yeah, it was one of the big surprises for me. But yeah,
since one month. I was surprised. You know, your place is fairly young, but a couple of weeks ago on Saturday, I passed by, and there's so many people, like, you know, cool looking young people, couples, individuals. It's like in and out to try to see what's going on. And I mean, when I first time heard about dashi okume and dashi ingredients, they are not sexy by itself, but your store made it very sexy. So it's almost like, you know, little attraction and a very good place to be on the weekend. But also heard that some chefs, Japanese and non-Japanese chefs, come to try to get some ideas for their recipe development. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. There are so many inquiries for wholesale since day one. And lots of famous chefs, like, I'm not sure if I can say the name, but there are so many, like, Michelin three-star chefs who visit our store, and they are all excited about, especially when they see the ingredients. I think their imagination go crazy, and yeah, they are all always very excited to see the ingredients by itself. So yeah, we are like trying to give some advice on a good combination for the purpose of the use.
Do they prefer something different from compared to other consumers? Do they have favorite ingredients among chefs?
Some of them are very familiar with dashi, so they know what to make. And some of them want some advice. So it really depends. But yeah, but I was very surprised that most of the chefs prefer like very traditional Japanese dashi. I thought they're gonna make like crazy dashi, adding some like unique, like very unique ingredients. But I was very surprised that they already know the great good combination of dashi. They are very educated already about dashi.
Oh wow, that's good to know. Right. Yeah, like you said earlier, I think Western chefs started to use Japanese dashi as a hidden umami source. So sounds like you're boosting that trend even among Western chefs as well. Right. So now I bought my own dashi customized from you. So how can I use it? Do you have any good recipes to try?
Yeah, the most simple one is to like drink a dashi by itself by adding a bit of salt only. Some of the customers already are trying that in the morning instead of coffee. And then if you want to make use dashi for your cooking, yeah, as I told you before, miso soup is nice to try first. It's very simple. You just have to brew dashi and add zudon miso and add some ingredients like tofu, seaweed, yeah, that's it. So, and you can also make udon, soba, or shabu-shabu, like a Japanese hot pot nabe. Yeah, so there are many ways to use. And also, like I told you before, told everybody before, like you can just simply add dashi into your daily cooking to increase umami. Yeah, there are many ways and simple ways to use this, I think.
Right. Well, here's my the easiest, and also kind of I feel like I was cheating, but so I have a rice cooker, like regular rice cooker, and then I got a dashi from your place, and then I just threw in in a rice cooker. It's just plain sushi rice and rice cooker. Oh my God, that was amazing, amazing. It's just, I can't go back without it. So, yeah. And also, of course, in Japan, it's very popular in the fall to put a lot of different, the autumn ingredients in rice and cook with dashi, like, you know, chestnut to a lot of vegetables, the root vegetables. So it's one thing you can really play with rice, just regular white rice. It really elevates the flavor of both rice itself and added ingredients. So that's one thing. And also,
yeah, I think I agree. Yeah, that's nice. Takikomi gohan is very nice.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. That's one thing. It's the fall. That's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yes. That's right.
And also, you know, I think we have to mention dashimaki tamago, which is just the omelette, but you just add some dashi. And I mean, if you go to sushi place, that comes close to the end of sushi course, and that's dashimaki tamago, and it's just the interesting depths you can add to just simple eggs. And that's I mean, every morning if you make an omelette, you can do it. And that's the power of dashi, really changes the flavor to the next level. So yeah, there are so many interesting creative ideas with dashi.
Yeah. I'm very curious about like how American people use dashi in their home cooking. Is it like other than like Japanese cuisine? So yeah, it's gonna be really great if you, like, yeah, if yeah, it's good. It's good, great to know if like through Instagram or yeah, SNS.
Yeah, maybe you should do some like contest on Instagram.
we are thinking of holding that too. Yeah, yes.
I am very curious. Okay, so what are your plans and dreams? I mean, personally or at Okume?
Yeah, Okume. I personally think like we should deliver more dashi culture. We can enrich the culture of food. So I personally want to open another Okume store in like West Coast. There's not so many customers from West Coast coming into a store, and they are very excited and they request us to open a store in like LA or California. So yeah, and also feel that you need to taste dashi before like using it. So I feel like I want to open up the second shop and let them try the dashi. Mm-hmm. I didn't really discuss with our founder, so it's not really like company's decision, but yeah, it's my personal plan. Mm-hmm.
Dashi ambassador's plan. So
yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think, well, we didn't mention any health benefit of dashi, but of course, they say umami can boost the taste, like sensation of sweetness and saltiness, and also kind of round out the bitterness and acidity. So as a result, you feel more satisfied and you don't have to add extra salt or sweetness to keep chasing what's missing. So at the end of the day, you have more balanced food and you get so satiated. So people say if you want to lose weight, have some dashi. And I'm not sure how scientifically it's proven, but I think there's a point. And I think just one thing people should pay attention to, how satisfying the taste becomes by consuming dashi.
Yes, and yeah, it's also very nutritious. Like bonito flakes contains like protein, vitamin C and vitamin D, and like it's good for your skin because it kind of contains lots of collagen inside, and also like kombu has lots of minerals and iron, sodium. So yeah, it's really nutritious and no fat. Less fat, so yeah, it's not, I think it's very healthy product.
Right. Well, I have to confess. So the other day, I was looking at this, shaved bonito, and in the plastic bag. Like, it's not expensive, but I was looking at the protein content, and it was like you said, it's really high, like incredibly high. And yeah. I snacked on it without putting it in water. Even I just snacked on it, and I was like, I didn't get hungry for a long time. So. It's just a nutritious, concentrated, very nourishing ingredients, not just for dashi, but you can really rely on that health benefit of having nourishing food, basically.
Yeah, I think so. And by using dashi, you don't really need like fatness. You don't really need to use fatty ingredients to make it tasty. So yeah, you can... You only have to consume. Consumption of calories is going to be lower if you use dashi.
Mm. Right. Well, that's a good point, because before Japanese food became Western, at the end of 19th century, we didn't have fat. The tuna belly used to be thrown away because it was too fatty for Japanese palate. So you're right. So traditional Japanese food didn't need any fat element. So that's a great point. Right. Okay, so where can we find your updates online and on social media?
Yeah, you can find definitely us on Dash Okume Brooklyn store online, and you can also check our updates on our Instagram. Yeah.
Okay.
So please follow us. Yeah.
Right. So it's okume.us, right? That's the website and also Instagram. That's Okume. It's okume.us. So it's both website as well as on Instagram. All right.
Yes.
So thank you so much for joining us today, Shohen, and good luck.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Engineer is Armin Spengen, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.